This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast. Chris Graham and Scott German talking today on the eve of UVA Duke, number 2 versus number 4. And, you know, Scott and I were talking about, for me anyway, I wish it was already Saturday at 2 o'clock. But, you know, we got some time. We got some time to enjoy, I guess, the last few hours of the walk-up to this game. And, you know, anticipate a lot. Scott, you know, how are you keeping sane right now? It's hard for me to. So how are you keeping sane right now?
Lots of walks and fresh air and adult beverages. Well, I can't say adult beverages, I guess, because I don't consume adult beverages. But I'm just trying to read about things, other issues and other events in the world that might be, some people might consider more important, like Trump and things going on in the basketball world that outside of UVA. But it's difficult. It's very difficult. But you know, it's going about pretty good, and I'm ready for it to tip off more.
So I've talked, Scott, and Jeff Fife was with me yesterday. We talked. I broke down the game and some of the keys. Want to get your sense of your thoughts on that. I mean, you've been watching this program for, you know, your entire life. You've been covering them for 40 plus years. What do you see as some of the keys to the game for Virginia? And we have to admit, it will be an upset, even though Virginia's number 2, Duke's number 4, you're on the road at the number 4 team. So what would it take for Virginia to pull the upset and beat Duke tomorrow?
Well, for Virginia to play Virginia basketball. And, you know, if you're going to ask me, am I confident that Virginia's going to go down to Cameron and win tomorrow, I'm going to say that I am more confident that Virginia can go in there and get a win now than I was even as little as 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is one player, and that's DeAndre Hunter. Because now I'm convinced, I was never not convinced that we couldn't defensively clamp down on Duke, but I was a little concerned that we would have enough offensively to battle Duke. But with the emergence of Hunter and how well he's played offensively for the last couple of weeks, and also, you know, we don't want to go too far without mentioning how well he's played defensively, because we all know it doesn't matter how good of an offensive player he is, he'd be on the bench with one of the best seats in the house if he wasn't holding up his end of the bargain on the defensive floor, on the defensive end of the floor. So because DeAndre has stepped up his game offensively and has given us another complete dimension to our game, I'm a lot more confident than I was 2 weeks ago. But I'm still probably slightly less than 50%. But 2 weeks ago, I probably would have been somewhere around the 20% probability, if that means anything.
I'll throw out too. So DeAndre Hunter, we've been talking a lot, and I've been writing a lot about DeAndre Hunter the last few weeks because his emergence. 5 of the last 6 games in ACC play, double figures for him scoring. Even the other night against Clemson, didn't have double digits in that game, but he played stellar defense, a season high 27 minutes with Isaiah Wilkins on the bench for the last 17 minutes of that shutdown of Clemson in that 61-36 win. I'll throw Jack Salt out there. We talk about Salt a lot too. You know, not a lot of Virginia fans and certainly the media thinks much about Jack Salt. He's sort of just an appendage on this fist of the Virginia defense in a lot of ways. He doesn't put stats up, and not just offensive stats. He doesn't even have a lot of rebounding stats or block shot stats. But he plays 20 to 25 minutes a game for a reason, his positional defense in the post. And against this Duke team, the size this Duke team has, that's the only thing that worries me, is that you know, you got Marvin Bagley III and Wendell Carter. They're both 6'10", 6'11". I think Bagley's 6'11". He's 230, so he's a little thinner there at, you know, at his height. But Carter is 6'10", about 255. Big boy. And so Salt's going to have to have, you know, we might have to have Salt go 30 minutes tomorrow to, you know, be able to guard one of those two guys. I'm not sure which guy that that Tony puts him on. And certainly Isaiah Wilkins, he's the best defensive player in the country, post or perimeter, but Isaiah's given up some size here. He's 6'7", listed at 6'7". I'm not sure if he's actually 6'7". Now, he's stouter than he was in past years. He's putting up, he's about 235, 240, up from when he was a freshman. He was 220. But, you know, he's going to give up some inches, you know, to those guys in the post. Hunter probably does too. Hunter gives up inches and size. He's about 215. So we're going to need Jack Salt to really, you know, stay out of foul trouble early, but also just bang with whoever he's with. And he's probably going to have time on both of those big guys. Salt's going to be a real key. Even if he doesn't score a point, grab more than a couple of rebounds, how Jack Salt plays, I think, goes a long way to determining how Virginia plays tomorrow.
I agree. You know, he's going to have to give us a Jack Salt-like performance and up it maybe just a tad bit. And that doesn't mean anything's going to show up in the offensive category as far as points. But, yeah, and he's probably going to be asked to play a few more minutes. I wouldn't be surprised if his minute total does get into the upper 20s, maybe even hit the 30-minute mark, provided that all-important X factor is that he doesn't step off the bus down in Durham tomorrow with two fouls. and we know that's certainly within the realm of possibility. You know, another thing that I feel confident about that makes me feel a little more confident is I was reading an interesting article, and I think it was a very Duke biased article about how improved the Duke defense was over the course of the last four or five games. Well, Chris, do you know, over the last five games, Duke has played the two worst teams in the Atlantic Coast Conference three times. They played Pitt twice and Wake one.
Actually, Wake twice. The four of their last five have been two against Wake and two against Pitt, so you're right on there. They should be playing better defense, right?
They should be playing better statistically. They should be playing better everything when they're playing the you know, right now, the bottom dwellers of the ACC. Four or five games, that's as big a candy run as I could possibly imagine a team having this year in the ACC. So from that standpoint, how are they going to respond, at least on their on the defensive end of the floor, or excuse me, when they're playing, how are they going to respond to this Virginia defense? I mean, that's not. I know when the schedule laid out, you know, I'm sure Krzyzewski, no one had a crystal ball to see that these two teams, Wake and Pitt, would be playing so poorly. But it is what it is, and that certainly hasn't really given Duke a whole lot of. You know, a whole lot of preparation for playing a Virginia team. I don't know if it's possible that you could ever prepare for playing a UVA defensive team unless you just play 8-on-5 in your practice. So, yeah, that's another thing that I think is going to favor UVA is that Duke's not going to be quite ready to face that defensive intensity that you know they're going to get from the very get-go tomorrow.
Well, and for all the talk about Virginia having a supposed glut of home games at the start of the ACC schedule, I mean, Virginia's played 5 of 8 at home. This will be the 9th game, and it'll be the 4th on the road. The 3 of the last 4 for Duke have been at home, and those three were Wake, Pitt, and Wake. It's 2 of 4, but Wake home with Wake at Miami, home with Pitt. And then in a way at Wake, which isn't much of a road game, just a few miles down the road in a not very difficult environment to play in. You know, they did beat Miami and beat them on the road. That was an impressive win. They were down 13, 7 minutes to go, and took over with their defense. Their defense, though, they went zone. And Miami also struggled against Louisville. Louisville doesn't play a zone technically, but their man looks like a zone. I watched a lot of that game the other night. Miami is just offensively challenged. If you look at Miami, that's the one game of the last five that has anything impressive to it. And Miami on offense this year ranked just 86th in adjusted efficiency by KenPom.com. So you're not talking about something there that even that one signature win of the last 2 or 3 weeks for Duke, you know, it's on the road. Yeah, give them credit for that. But against a team that has trouble scoring itself, so yeah, you know, this great run of defense by Duke is bolstered largely by their you know, lesser opposition.
So, to turn the tables and ask you a question, what happens? Who do you think is facing the more pressure in this game, Virginia or Duke? And what happens if Virginia does beat Duke for these two teams? Does it mean anything at all? I mean, really? I mean, one game in an Atlantic Coast Conference schedule of 18. If you're the coach of Duke or Virginia, if you win or lose, how do you spend the rest of the season?
Well, I know that we as Virginia fans and followers know what the Dukes and Carolinas have known for a long time, which is you want to win every game you go out there and play, you know, in a regular season, but, you know, the games that really count are the ones in March. So that said, this is an important barometer for both teams. It's a more important barometer for Duke, I would say. You know, Virginia's 8-0. Even if they lose the game, they're 8-1. Even if they lose by 30 points at Duke, you write that off and say, well, you know, it was at Duke. They needed it more, et cetera. If you're Duke, you know, you've lost twice to lesser opposition. I mean, no offense to Boston College and NC State, but, you know, NC State may be on the bubble of the NCAA tournament. I don't know that they are right now. And Boston College isn't even near the bubble of the NCAA tournament. And Duke lost to both those teams. Now, on the road, yes, but they didn't play good defense either of those games. They didn't play, obviously, as good offense as they could have because they lost those games to those teams. And, you know, Duke can ill afford a loss at home. Not for, you know, it's not about the ACC regular season. We Virginia fans especially, you know, our run of success has been recent. So anytime they get a chance to put a banner up, we want to put a banner up. But it's not about the ACC regular season as much, though, as the confidence of the team. And if Duke loses this game to a Virginia team that, boy, I mean, if you're Duke, you've got basically a six-man rotation. Five of them are freshmen. All six of those guys are likely to be in the NBA draft next year because Grayson Allen's a senior. He's got to go. I mean, whether he's in the draft or not, he's done. But I think he's a first-round pick. And then I think three or four of those other guys are probably first-round picks, and the other two are probably second-round picks. I just don't think you're going to see any of those top six back next year, especially when you look at the recruiting class they have coming in next year. So if you're this Duke team, this is your chance, and really your only chance, between now and the NCAA tournament to establish yourself as a top team, because at this stage North Carolina is diminished. They lost to Virginia Tech the other night. They're not anybody that should, you know, they play Duke at home and home, obviously, you know, and I think the first game's in about 10 days or so, but Carolina's not a signature win. Even if they beat them twice, it's not a signature win. You know, honestly, Duke, this is the toughest game left on Duke's schedule until the NCAA tournament. And if they go out and lose this game at home to a Virginia team with supposedly far less talent than what Duke has on the floor, then, yeah, I think what it does is, for Coach K and for those players, it probably plants some big seeds of doubt into whatever ability they have to win a national championship. And so, yeah, they need to go out there and win that just to be able to maintain confidence heading into March.
I think that's true. You know, I kind of look at it that there is some pressure. I mean, I'm not saying that Tony's going to, you know, that hasn't already gotten into the kid's head about, in his mind, he's already knows how he's going to, you know, move forward regardless. But I don't think a loss certainly doesn't, you know, damage the season or seeding significantly. I think, however, if you did lose to Duke, it doesn't, for the time being, would move us down in the seed line. And that could, you know, that could inevitably at the end of the season when the NCAA tournament selection committee, you know, makes their announcements, it could be the difference between being a number one or a number two seed. And that could be the difference between opening up here in the, you know, in our region, or maybe getting shipped out to the West somewhat. So if you lose to Duke, just, you know, going by what you just said, this is going to probably be Duke's toughest game the rest of the season. And open. I don't know if that really means anything at the end of the day when you open the tourney play and you run into a hot team. But I mean, it could if you looked at it, just taking it further down the road.
I'll throw that. That's a good point you make, and I'll throw out that ESPN, the BPI, the Basketball Power Index, that they use their predictive analysis kind of machine to give you some thoughts on these kind of games. If they ran numbers on if Virginia wins, Virginia loses, Duke wins, Duke loses, what your chance is to be a number one national seed. If Virginia wins, they're 95% chance to be a number one national seed. I think that's probably low. They win this game, they're not losing the rest of the way, which is just, I can't believe I'm even saying that out loud. But you look at the rest of the schedule, and they're favored. And after this game, they're favored in every game the rest of the season. So, if Virginia wins this game, 95% chance of being a number one seed. If Virginia loses the game, 87% chance of being a one seed because they still have that same schedule. That looks like they'll be favored every game the rest of the regular season. If Duke wins the game, they're a 65% chance to be a number one seed. Now, even if they win, 65% chance. If they lose, a 38% chance. Their schedule gets a lot tougher as the second half of the season goes on. They got Carolina twice, for example. They got Notre Dame. They got Syracuse. So their schedule gets a lot tougher. Virginia's is rather manageable. That said, yeah, I mean, this game 4 years ago, actually 3 years ago, I guess, it was the 2014-2015 season. Virginia entered this game with Duke, and that game was in Charlottesville that year, 19-0 record. That Duke team came in reeling a bit. They were 4-3 in the ACC at that point that year. Duke came back in the last 5 minutes, won that game, and didn't lose the rest of the way. Actually, they lost one game in the ACC tournament, so they lost one game after the Virginia game the rest of the way, won 6 in March and April and won the NCAA tournament. And we know that Virginia, of course, as Scott laid out here, I mean, they dropped to the 2-seed line even with a 29-3 regular season record and then lost in the second round to Michigan State. So in that sense, yeah, these kind of things can matter in that sense. But, you look – that team was different. That's that scenario with Duke was different. I think that's why I still throw out there that this game is much, much more important for Duke because – they win this game, and it could be the ignition point, kind of like for that 2015 team that had Jameel Okafor and Justice Winslow and a young Grayson Allen at that point. They if they lose that game, they may bounce out of the first round of the tournament because they would have had no confidence after that. They won the game, they built some confidence. Some of us remember, Scott, you remember, I'm sure, that. The reaction of the Duke group when they won that game in the tunnel right there in front of the media room, they acted like they won the national championship that day. Turned out that kind of was one of the reasons they won the national championship that year. They could beat that Virginia team. So if they can win this game tomorrow, and I'll say this, and we got to talk about this a little bit as we get to the second half of the podcast. Last time I was at a Duke UVA game in Durham, the only time I've been at a Duke UVA game in Durham was 2014, the year before that, and I remember that was an early season game, the year that Virginia won the ACC regular season, beat Duke for the ACC tournament. Duke came back in the second half, beat a Virginia team, won that three-pointer from, I think it was Rashid Suleiman, that bounced up in the air about 5 feet before it went through the net with about 10 seconds to go. I remember when Coach K left the floor, I'd never seen him that jubilant before. Like he knew he had beat a good team, but we didn't know he had beaten a good team. That was still maybe third or fourth ACC game that year. Virginia would, after that game, go on a 12-game winning streak. But he knew that he had done something that day for his team to beat that Virginia team. And so I have a feeling, I know he's talking about those two wins over Virginia. And he's trying to pump his guys up because I think he knows how important this game is, not just for seeding or anything else. I think for confidence. And so I'll just throw out there one more thought. Virginia goes out and plays like they did against Florida last year in the NCAA tournament. That to me is the only scenario where a Virginia loss is damaging. You lose by 5 points, you lose by 1 point, whatever. If you're competitive and lose tomorrow, nobody's going to be upset about that. But if you go out and lay an egg tomorrow, that's where you say, we beat some teams, but we got blown out. We'll have to kind of start from scratch here. That's the only thing that I'm concerned about is that would be the only thing that would concern me would be a blowout loss there. Anything else? I think I can handle.
Right. You don't want to lay an egg. And I don't think anyone anticipates that because that team that played Florida in the second round of the NCAA tournament last year, and this team is light years. This team is much more athletic on offense, and more weapons. It's just not a completely different UVA team. Now, you know, regardless of what we think of Mike Krzyzewski, and we can't really probably say a lot of what we think of him over the air, but the thing he is good at is that, you know, inspiring his teams. And I remember reading an article, and it made me feel kind of good at the time, that he, in that 14-15 season, he actually attributed getting over the hump and being a national championship quality team in that game against Virginia that you were talking about when they beat us in JPJ. Is that correct?
That's right. Yep.
19-0.
Yeah.
They haven't been playing that good a defense all year, and they played a much better defensive game that night. Certainly a passable defensive game. I mean, and they went on to be a much better defensive team for the rest of the year. And he in one of the articles I read, he looked back on the season and basically pointed to that night, that Saturday night in Charlottesville, being what put Duke over the hump as far as being a team that had legitimate national championship hopes. And, you know, I'm sure he's not letting that fact, he's not letting that elude his current team, you know, because no one's saying this is a good defensive Duke team. I think their KenPom ratings is way low. I think they've improved a little bit lately, but, yeah, hard not to imagine an improvement when you play Wake and Pitt 4 out of 5 games. So, knowing Krzyzewski, that's a fact that he's impressing upon this team. Hey, people say we don't play great dudes. There's a chance to really show who we are and what it's going to take to win a national championship. So I don't think anyone will be surprised or should be surprised if we don't see Duke's A game defensively tomorrow.
Yeah.
What is Duke's A game? What are they capable of if you play?
And the limitation there is their rotation. They really only go about 6 deep, and that's why he goes to a zone a lot in second half of games. And the zone worked against Miami. And Miami, you know, watching that Miami game, they were up 13 about 7 minutes to go, and then Duke went zone. And it wasn't that they were playing a Syracuse 2-3, you know, like the way Syracuse plays 2-3, or way, you know, the way teams who zone regularly, you know, have principles. They just kind of, you know, the guys were aligned in a 2-3 zone. Miami, the response by Miami was what was surprising. Jim Larranaga is a good coach. He's, you know, took George Mason to the Final Four. He won an ACC tournament with Miami. He's got that program back into prominence. And but you know that this Duke team goes to a zone defense in the second half, not really because that's their signature defense. It's because they get desperate. And they're also tired because they really only play, for the most part, 5 guys. I mean, they'll bring a guy off the bench, but he only plays 10 minutes a game. So they're tired, and they play zone because zone lets you stand in position and not have to move around that much. And so the fact that Larranaga wasn't prepared for that and called a couple timeouts and still couldn't get his players to execute a basic zone play had as much to do or more to do with Duke coming back and winning that game as Duke playing great zone defense. You know, and I wrote a column, Scott, a couple weeks ago about Duke and their defense and over the last seasons. You know, the first year for them of the one-and-done era, you know, Coach Calipari at Kentucky has been using the one-and-dones for several years. Coach K really only started using them in 2014 when Jabari Parker arrived for his 1 year. When you go back to the 2014 season and all the way through to now, these numbers should stand out. 2014, adjusted defense, 86th. 2015, 11th, 2016, 86th, 2017, 47th, and 2018, 70th. The team that was 11th was the one that won the national championship. So that, you know, and the others lost in the first round or second round of the NCAA tournament. So this team is more like those teams that lost early in tournaments, not like the team that won a championship. Yeah, he's trying to tell his guys, hey, you go out there and play defense tomorrow, and you can show yourself to be something. But actually, if you look at that team in 2015, he's a good salesperson, Scott. We know that. That 2015 team played defense pretty much all season long. They beat Virginia, and that was impressive, but they didn't beat them just because of defense. In fact, Virginia scored in that game 63 points on 58 possessions. So that's not a championship defensive resume game for Duke either. They won the game because they scored 22 points in the last 4 minutes of that game, not because of great defense. So but that's what he's telling his guys, no doubt. And I don't know that this Duke team is capable of playing more than a few minutes of zone defense against that are effective against teams who don't know how to play zone offense. Fortunately for our fan base, Virginia knows how to play zone offense. And so you almost want to dare Duke into playing zone because, you know, Virginia plays Syracuse well offensively every time they go out there and play. Who was it recently? There was another recent team that tried to go – Wake Forest tried to go zone against Virginia a couple times. You slide that guy down at the foul line. You pass it into him. It's usually either Hunter or Wilkins. They either hit the little 12-foot jump shot. They pass to the perimeter for the open three. They crash down to the post guy for a dunk. I mean, Virginia knows how to play against the zone, and so if that's Coach K's secret weapon, bring it on.
Well, what discussion of playing Duke how could we possibly not throw in for Virginia fans the conspiracy theory?
We have to, yes.
How long does it take Jack Salt to get two fouls?
Actually, more importantly, how long does it take Isaiah Wilkins to get two fouls?
Or Isaiah Wilkins, right? Or what is this? What is the? What will be the free throw disparity? And you can't really look at that because we know how makeup calls work. They'll make that balance out somewhat on paper, but crunch time, what's the free throw disparity? So, we wouldn't be true UVA fans if we didn't throw that out a little bit. So, with that said, I'm just kind of trying to find out if there's any way of knowing in advance who the officiating crew will be tomorrow. But I don't guess the conference puts that out in advance.
I don't even know that it matters what their names are because they'll get their pregame reports telling them what to do. I've thought this too, Scott, and I hate to be this way, but we've watched, and if you're listening to this podcast almost 30 minutes in, you've watched a lot of ACC basketball over the years as well. And, I think we'll all be watching for that first 4 minutes. Before the media timeout, does Virginia have a guy on the bench with two fouls? And is it either Salt or Wilkins? Or both? I mean, do we see a chintzy offensive foul called on Ty Jerome? Do we see the Duke guys getting away with grabbing and clutching Kyle Guy on screens and not getting called for that? You know, we can really tell in the first 5 minutes if this is going to be on the up and up or if it's going to be more like a WWE scripted wrestling match that the outcome is predetermined and we just have to go through the motions to get there. And I'll be honest, Scott, I've been – and I told this to Jeff Fife yesterday – I've been making the case for a few days all the reasons Virginia should win this game. And to me, if this game's played straight up, Virginia wins this game. I don't think it's a question of, if the game's played straight up, who's a better team, Duke or Virginia? Virginia's a better team. I don't care that it's at Duke in Cameron. I think Virginia wins this game straight up. But we also both know that the ACC does not want Duke to be three games behind Virginia, even though we want to call the regular season somewhat meaningless, etc. No, they want Duke to get a number one seed. They want Duke to win the national championship. If Virginia gets there on their own, congratulations, go Hoos. But this conference wasn't built on Virginia. This conference was built on Duke and UNC. And so UNC's having an off year this year. It's Duke's turn. And we will see in the first 5 minutes tomorrow whether or not the ACC is going to play this fair or they're going to play it the way we know they're going to play it. Which is let's foul Virginia out and make sure there's not even a chance they win this game.
Well, I agree. And you made a mention that we followed a lot of UVA basketball, and I've followed ACC basketball, UVA basketball for 30-some years. And I'm going to tell you, if someone were to ask me, is there a bias in the conference, you better believe there's a bias in the conference. And because they're going to protect their marquee teams. And their marquee teams in basketball are Duke and North Carolina. It's shifting, and it's going to change, and it'll change even more when Boyd Williams and Krzyzewski leave. Some people say it's already changed, but it hasn't completely changed yet. And it's in the best interest for the ACC to have Duke in that position, to get a number one seed, to be at home, to be somewhere in the East, South, or wherever. And I've seen those biases. I've seen them up close. I've seen them from court level. Krzyzewski has an intimidation factor over the officials. He has it even over the established officials, but he has it significantly more over some of the young officials who know that at the end of the year they get graded, and if they get graded out poorly by the right coaches, they're back doing ODAC games or CAA games. So to say that there's not a bias in the ACC as far as officiating goes, you'd have to be awful gullible to believe that, because it does happen and it does exist. That's not to say it will happen tomorrow, because Virginia just could come right out and take control of that game and not let the officials have a say in it. But knowing how different the two teams are made up, the best way Duke can offset UVA's depth is to get a couple of their players in quick foul trouble, early foul trouble. That's how you offset the depth issue, disparity.
Oh, yeah. And I'm trying to look real quick. I got some stats up here. And here's the telling stat, and I knew this was going to be the case. I just had to look it up and make sure. Okay, so if Virginia ends up with a huge disparity in fouls over Duke, right now in the national rankings, Virginia ranks 348th in personal fouls. There's 351 teams. Virginia has committed less fouls than all but three teams. Right now in the ACC, they're actually 14th. So somehow one of those teams is an ACC team. So Virginia averages, doing that quick math there, they average right about 13 fouls a game. So if we see foul trouble, if Virginia has a bunch of guys sitting on the bench in the first half and foul trouble, we know what's happening. And we've seen it before, and we'll see it again. Just looking to see real quick. And it's not Duke, by the way. Duke, in fact, is third in fouls in the ACC. So one of their big guys, Wendell Carter's fouled out twice. He's had four fouls seven times in a game this year. So, you know, you can just imagine he's going to probably commit one foul probably in the second half when the game's already over. And that's going to be his contribution for the day. It's, you know, I hate to be this way, but it's, you know, I don't want to complain after the fact. So we're complaining before the fact. We're prepared. Yeah.
We're not going to do that after the fact, because that sounds like we're plotting, you know, crybabies or sour grapes, or when we're just preparing people. And, you know, another thing, too, and we've talked about this along first legs. the officials can make those total fouls just about anything they want, and they do. In fact, I had one that talked to one of the Hall of Fame officials in college basketball. When asked directly, is there such a thing as a makeup call? And he looked at me and said, you better believe it. And I've seen that happen over and over and over. It's not how many fouls, it's when they're called and to whom they're called. So at the end of the first half, the fouls are going to be, I think they're probably going to be pretty rough, could be pretty equally divided. You know, Duke may have 10, Duke may have 7, or 11 and 8. But you get two early fouls on Isaiah Wilkins. And Duke was effectively balanced out. They checked off the depth situation when Isaiah's sitting on the bench, or Ty Jerome, or anyone.
opinions. How that? So, not how many fouls it's called, because at the end of the half, they can make that look pretty good. And they usually do. It's generally not glaring different. But, again, I know it sounds like I'm a conspiracy believer, but sorry, I've seen it.
Yeah, they gotta be careful because no question that they've got to make sure the ACC's got to make sure it's just protecting your investments, all that is. So
exactly, the ACC's a business,
and ACC's a business, and the marketing's still set up the way it's set up. So now we've really prepared you. We talked some X's and O's. We talked some coaches' strategy, how they'll talk to their teams, and then we brought you into the realm of conspiracy. Which, hey, it's only conspiracy if you don't believe it. I watch the X-Files. I love, as a big fan of the X-Files. If the truth is out there, and if you believe the lie, it's true. So I don't know. There's all that kind of stuff out there. The game is at 2 o'clock tomorrow. CBS, I think it's our only appearance on CBS this season, we'll be live blogging during the game. Scott and I will try to pull ourselves together to do a podcast afterwards and break it down for you. And I'm sure we'll have a lot of postgame coverage, especially. I've done several pregame previews, so we got you all ready. This podcast is our last pregame podcast, so now we will just try to somehow get through. For us, it's about 4 o'clock on Friday as we're finishing up. We'll try to get through the next 22 hours somehow, some way. And Scott, I wish you the best of luck, because I'm already frothing at the mouth. I don't know how you're going to get through the next 22 hours, because I'm already spinning. I'm already that's where I am right now. So best of luck to you.
Well, I will tell you this. I've sent the wife packing for the weekend in looking out for her best interest. And I only will ask this to UVA fans that are listening. If we do lose, please be kind to your pet. Don't be kicking the dog out the door. The sun will come up Sunday morning, no problem.
Yeah, it'll come up either way. That's right. So. For Scott German, I'm Chris Graham, signing off. Wahoo wah. Talk to you again soon.